Okay, hi everybody. I guess I'm trying something new here. Below we have a live transcript going on, and maybe this will help in deciphering what I'm saying, and also compare it to what the Tibetan is saying. Of course, there will be lots of errors, no question about that, because these are unusual words that I'm using. Now, this is the 26th of, I'll put that off to the side, and this is the 26th of August, and program number 36. Just hoping to get everything together here. Let's see what we'll use for a segue. Well, we've been talking quite a bit about the difference between being accepted by the master and being the accepted disciple. The accepting disciple. There is a bridge between the two. And in this particular case, Master DK is emphasizing the importance of being the accepting disciple, as it really will lead into the stage of accepted or acceptance. He does emphasize that the thought of being accepted by the master, he says, this thought and its teaching by many esoteric groups has been productive of much error, much misunderstanding, much pain, and much disillusionment. May I say, not a very happy combination of results, I guess, because it is basically fundamentally in error, unless one is truly an accepting and, shall we also say, pledged disciple. DK goes on. A disciple is trained in certain important matters and not in his relation to a master. And I just have to say, we have such a personal point of view so often. Our point of view is that our relationship is with the master and not in relation to these important factors which makes us really of use. Now, we're ready to go on with program 36 on page 84 of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1. And we are still in the video commentary. Page 84. And he does want to tell us what these matters are in relation to which we should be trained and not, well, I remember he once told a disciple, the disciple ISGL, that your orientation is very much towards us as the hierarchy, and perhaps not so much in relation to these certain important matters. So now, in our next program here, which is program 36, we're going to look at what these important matters are. Okay, and I just want to make sure that we know that we finished program 35 last time. It seems to be a mixture, and there we go. Okay, now important matters. The whole subject of humanity, its present status, its problems. We remember DK has written that important book since, I think, updated by Jan Nation of the London headquarters at some point in the last, quite a few years now. But the whole subject, says DK, of humanity its present status, its problems, and the opportunity immediately presented. Well, may I say that we really need to broaden our point of view and think in terms of humanity. And it does have growing problems. I might add that the ecological problem was not so emphasized at the time that DK was writing the problems of humanity. But now it is a huge problem. And also the rise of autocracy, spurred on by the Black Lodge and its attempts to stop humanity's proper entrance into the Age of Aquarius. So now what do we have here? DK says, a disciple is one who seeks at all times to aid humanity and to further the processes of evolution, as well as to develop that deep love of mankind. And notice please, that it has to be developed. So, as he says, to develop that deep love of mankind, which is the distinguishing mark of the initiate and of the master. So, let me say, you know, there are excellent definitions along the way, and this is one of them. This is one of those definitions. Let's see here. Okay, I'm just trying to make sure that I can... it's not so easy here. Let's see. Sometimes I I have some difficulty with this program. I could be more astute regarding it, but I have the cooperation of those who really know the technicalities. Well, anyway, the disciple is one who seeks at all times, says the Tibetan, to aid humanity, and we can and should question ourselves on this point. Do we fulfill that quality of discipleship to aid humanity? And DK goes on saying, and to further the processes of evolution. May I ask, do we know how to do that? To further the processes of evolution, as well as to develop, he says, that deep love of mankind, which is the distinguishing mark of the initiate and the master. So therefore, as we ponder about these extra factors, we have to know whether or not we fulfill them. These factors of importance. Okay, so that's one of those factors to which we have to give attention. The whole subject of humanity, its present status, its problems, and the opportunity immediately presented. We remember, perhaps, that the Lord Maitreya, the Christ, asked Master DK, I believe it was DK he asked, what is this group that has interested itself in our work, something to that effect? And that was when the groups had begun to study the problems of humanity. Okay, what is another one of these? Well, let's build that up a little bit. Factors of importance. What is another one? The subject of initiation. Okay, well, I don't think we'll have trouble convincing people to turn their attention to this subject. The very first book for the public, which DK wrote, was on this subject because he knew, well, I'm proposing, because he knew of the great interest people had. And so he goes on to say, a study of this subject will lead to a consideration of its secondary development and its basic objective of a progressive identification with the soul of the disciple, with the soul of the group, with the soul of humanity as a whole, and with the soul of all forms. Now, would we not say that there's something about the study of initiation which is involved deeply with soul identification. Well, perhaps, is he saying here that it is important and every true disciple is tended in that direction, but it is of a secondary nature when compared with the whole subject of humanity? I wonder, friends, do we know really what it means to identify with our own soul, if we can say there is such a thing, because we're told no longer use the thought, my soul and thine. But when we look at another from supposedly a soul identified position, do we identify with the soul of that other? Or are we simply seeing them as personalities? That's the question. When we look at the group, do we see the personality of the group? Or do we see the soul of the group? And of course, the whole question of identifying that way, seeing the soul of humanity, if possible, and the many, many forms that are part of what's traditionally called the many, in contrast with the one, do we see the soul? Of the different kingdoms of nature, animal, vegetable, mineral. And maybe it's easier to see or understand the soul of those who have entered the fifth kingdom of nature and beyond. Okay, going on then with DK, he's talking about factors of importance rather than our concern over whether the master has accepted us or not. The subject of service, this is what DK says, this subject of service is the next factor of importance. I realize that some strange artifacts are appearing here and there. If I had a green screen, they wouldn't appear, but green is not the color we're using for this purpose. So Master DK goes on to describe the nature of service, this particular subject, as he sees it in this context. This is not service, he says, as it is usually understood. The ordinary connotation has largely lost its significance through wrong emphasis. Now, may I say, this is the point of view of the master, whether we would understand service. as the spontaneous, easy, note the word, easy expression of a definite soul contact, brought down onto the physical plane and giving insight, practicality, and inspiration to the disciple as he works on the outer plane of expression. Now, may I say that is a different point of view. The service is spontaneous. You have to labor at trying to serve. And he didn't use the word difficult, did he? He used the word easy expression. We seem to have what we might call a flowing expression. And the soul contact is definite. And I wonder how many of us can say that we have the definite soul contact. Usually, often, we are aspirants towards that definite soul contact. And what does it give? Insight, practicality, and inspiration. So the fruits of this soul contact are beneficial, and it will affect our outer plane of expression. I guess for me, the whole thing is about the spontaneity of real service. One serves, in my view, because of what one is. It's one's natural radiation and magnetism that is operating, and not because one is struggling to serve. Now, DK elaborates on this a bit. Most disciples are occupied vaguely with achieving inspiration, but know nothing of the earlier stages of insight leading to the practical and wise expression of the met need upon the level of daily living. So he's giving us an understanding of where we usually stand. We're kind of putting the cart in front of the horse. There's a earlier stage of insight, which we don't quite manage. He goes on to say, one of the major undertakings of the accepted disciple, or as I would prefer to term it, he says, the accepting disciple, he certainly made a big connection there between those two, is to transform himself from a well-intentioned idealist into a man of action on behalf of humanity. Well, let's think about that. A transformation from an idealist to a man of action on behalf of humanity. What will that action be? Will it be strictly outer? Will it have its esoteric component, and notice here the DK uses the adjectival form well-intentioned idealist. He seems to contrast that word well-intentioned with practicality. So we can pause for a moment and look at the degree of actual action we take on behalf of humanity. Now, of course, if you are a writer, for instance, a writer, it may look strictly like mental work, but you are taking action. Even if, let's say, you're an actor, you bring to human beings on the outer plane some kind of understanding about the human condition. And then, of course, you can be an individual who deals more with practical external matters. And if we really understood what they do for humanity, they would be highly valued. I mean, why are we taking airplanes here and there? Who designed them? Who built them? Who manages them? There's an example of the very practical work on the outer level. There's just so many things in our modern world that practical, efficient, knowledgeable human beings can do. But if we simply say, wouldn't it be nice if, and do nothing in that direction, then we are this well-intentioned idealist who is not getting much done on behalf of humanity. So it always comes down, no matter what our form of service may be, to how are we helping? How are we really helping? And I do want to, this is one of those definitions of service, which should be noted. And I've got to say, read in conjunction with the third law of the soul, the law of service in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. So let us say that we should see to our radiation. And see to the type of magnetism we display. Because in those esoteric factors, this spontaneous and easy service, as the masters understand it, will be contained. All right, let's continue if there are any continuations. There are no continuations in these three points. Humanity, initiation, and service. Humanity, initiation, and service. Now, these are the things that Master DK would have us attend to, rather than whether or not we are accepted disciples. Of course, knowledge of our possible acceptance in the conventional sense might come to us through any of the five indications which we have studied in section 3 of the book. Now, I did reverse them. I did, as some of you may know, section 3 was done first. And here is section 1. I would like very much to be able to study some of these letters that DK wrote to individuals. I had thought that that study was going on with the group of esoteric astrologers who had been gathered to determine the name and astrology of the people who were sent letters. But apparently I was mistaken. They were working on the verification of the astrology of a very few. And so overall, the study of the letters, well, it's been accomplished many times in study groups, but I would like to give it a try. There's so many things that Tuya and I would like to offer as part of the opportunity to absorb the ageless wisdom at a critical point in human development. Okay, well, Master DK goes on. When a group can think unanimously along these lines, that is, the welfare of humanity and initiation and service, okay? When a group, he says, can think unanimously along these lines, and let us remember that the word unanimous means in a manner which is one-souled. Well, probably the audio transcript is going to pick that up as buying and selling, but the result of one soul at work. When a group, he says, can think unanimously along these lines and work in unison, may I add, one sound, unison, and then, of course, one anima, in the higher sense of that word, unanimously, then the first steps will have been taken towards group initiation, which is the goal of the new discipleship. Okay, so I had a little phone call I had to take care of. Anyway, I repeat what DK has said as he leads up to what group meditation, or rather initiation, group initiation involves. So when a group can think unanimously, he says, along these lines and work in unison, unanimously and in unison, then the first steps will have been taken towards group initiation, which is the goal of the new discipleship. Okay. And then he goes on to give us an idea of what group initiation involves. Now, it seems to me he does this fairly frequently, and there are lots of hints about what group initiation concerns. All of us, may I say, should be interested in it, because every true disciple is a candidate for the initiation which lies immediately ahead of himself or herself. Okay. So, what do we have according to DK? Group initiation involves the possession and recognition of a united, see, unison, unanimous, and now united, okay? So it involves, he says, the possession and recognition of a united vision to which the individual and the group, the individual in the group subordinates himself. Now I wonder if in our groups this particular objective is strong enough. Subordination to the vision which all the group members share. Okay, now what? The simultaneous rapport of the group members with the soul on its own level. Now, this is interesting and important. That composite group soul, which is composed of the soul of each individual member. And this leads, he says, to group integration on soul levels. Now, this is a moment when he talks about how the group soul is constituted, the soul of each individual member. Okay, so these are really important statements about group initiation. So the first one has to do with united vision. Okay. And the second one has to do with simultaneous rapport. Okay. Now this is all in preparation for group initiation. Then there's a 3 and a 4. Let's take a look. Also, group initiation involves, according to the Tibetan, the blended, consecrated contact of the group personalities upon the three levels of personality expression. Blended and consecrated. This is not, obviously, the normal type of personality interaction. And then, of course, what are these three levels? And this is obvious. As he says, the mental, astral, and etheric levels of awareness. Not only is the concept blended, integrated, fused, but it is a kind of, if I may say, a kind of sacred contact, which is very far from the usual personality interchange and the customary three levels are the arena for this blended consecration. Now he goes on to say, some group members contact each other on one level and some on another. But the aim should be a close contact on all three levels, which will, or at will, and all together, when the group, as a group, demands it. Maybe we have some experience with this. I know I have friends. Maybe that's surprising. Anyway, and we contact each other on mental levels. That is where we work. What he does outwardly is entirely different than what I do. And his emotional attitudes and tendencies and aspirations are entirely different from mine. But on mental levels, we can contact each other. But he's not a member of this kind of work. When it comes to this kind of work, then maybe contact on two or three of the levels is easier, a kind of foregone conclusion. And we can do more of what the Tibetan is suggesting. So question yourself. I'm questioning myself. And finding there is some replication on maybe an incomplete level or incomplete status of blended consecration. Did I say incomplete? I meant blended consecration. Sorry. Anyway, DK goes on to say, this is a hard saying, but later a clearer understanding will come. of what this means and what it brings about. Well, are we not really looking at how to produce an integrated group, and even later a group which is on the verge of fusion, or which is achieving fusion, which is an advanced state? So in all of your group processes, realizing that this factor of blended consecration leads to group initiation, do assess how the blending occurs, and where the lines of cleavage may lie. And then one more thing leading to group initiation. The ability, he says, of the group to stand united with no barriers between the group members of any kind. Well, that also is not easy, because little lines of criticism and disapproval and reservation, basically all the children of separativeness or separateness, do arise. So examine once again your group relations and see where barriers, which of course will also thwart telepathic interplay, where such barriers may be occurring. I guess if we put the group first, and put the consideration of humanity, of group initiation, and of service as the master sees it first, we will not be plagued by these problems. So here, reviewing just for a second, this stepping towards group initiation involves a united vision, simultaneous rapport, leading to group integration on soul levels. Now, you kind of wonder whether we ever achieve that. And blended, consecrated contact. Now, if the members of the group would simply read with real thoughtfulness what Master DK is saying, I can see that all these groups would be in a better condition and more helpful. And may I say that there is a lot of work to be done to bring our groups into the condition that Master DK tells us is necessary to be a really helpful discipleship group. And let's see, I'm going to use that same color. Now, how will we achieve this, all these things, so that no barriers of any kind stand as impediments between group members? And he tells us this will necessarily involve the sacrifice of personality, reactions, ideals, and plans. At present, he says, the varying ideals, attitudes, and points of view separate disciples from each other. These must go. I think we can see how much work may be involved in achieving the kind of preparation for group initiation which he's talking about, and generally achieving those important things, rather than overmuch concern about whether the master has accepted us or not. I think we can see the egotism in this question of, has the master accepted me? Gosh, there's some good things here. And I don't, you know, obviously, Tui and I have a program tonight on the reappearance of the Christ. So there's no way we're going to go up to page 89 and part 9 in this book, which will be the last part in section 1. But maybe we can do a little more. DK says, there are, of course, other requirements. When are there not? But if you can understand the above and seek to the best of your ability to meet them, that is all I ask at present. So he has definite requests. It's not, in a sense, a demand. He's said many times he cannot demand anything of us. Everything we do has to be of our own free will and accord. and even, may I say, attempting to understand what he has said, is demanding enough. Maybe somehow it can sink in to our consciousness. I think we're beginning to realize, certainly I am anyway, how extremely rich this book is. What a product of a detailed and organized mind, which is, in a way, a keynote for members of hierarchy. Master DK goes on. One of the great needs of all disciples and aspirants is the detached relinquishing of pet theories as to life, discipleship, and the plan. A pet is, let us say, in a way, an animal that we give a lot of affectionate attention to. But even though for us, our pet theories may be the best we can produce, they are not necessarily correct, and certainly not complete. So, repeating what the Master says here, one of the great needs of all disciples and aspirants is the detached relinquishing of pet theories as to life. As I think about my own pet theories, I would certainly hate to give them up. Okay. Pet theories as to life, discipleship, and the plan. The preserving of that open mind, which is ever ready for the unexpected presentation. And may I say, that's just what we're going to get from DK, because obviously a master mind, if I can call it that, is at work. And how could we, climbing the mountain of vision as we attempt to do, achieve the same vision as that of a master? So, we must ever be ready, he says, for the unexpected presentation, and able, when the spiritual vision is strong enough, to achieve a quick reversal of all preconceived ideas. Now, may I say, usually that reversal feels forced upon us, and we are dragged kicking and screaming into the new perspective. That is the reactionary attitude, and we cannot say that disciples are devoid of it. We might point out that people involved in the mass consciousness are given to this type of behavior, but maybe we have thought of ourselves as immune from this hanging on to the old presentation. So what's required here? A quick reversal of all preconceived ideals. Maybe I said the word ideas. Maybe there's not, at this point, so much difference between them. Now, DK goes on, this must be done when it is deemed spiritually wise, and it involves also that waiting attitude which expects new vision to appear. I think in some of the full moon meditations, we reach a stage of expectancy. And there is where perhaps the new really begins to appear. So, as he says, it involves that also that waiting attitude which expects the new vision to appear, the newer truths to emerge into formulated clarity, and the new potencies to become increasingly effective. Well, he is sharing with us, is he not, the proper attitude of the disciple, the mature disciple. As we can see, can we not, a kind of flexibility which is required of us to be an effective disciple moving towards initiation and towards group initiation and towards real helpfulness. Now, what further does he say? Such attitudes are peculiarly difficult for those disciples who have the sixth ray of devotion and idealism dominant in their energy equipment. I think we have to note the word dominant because many people may have the sixth ray, and it is a line of rapport into a needed field of service, but it's not dominant. Okay. So if they have these two rays dominant in their energy equipment, there is a problem, or can be. And DK goes on, for the ideas of the sixth ray aspirant crystallize most rapidly and are quickly distorted thereby. What he's saying here, right, is that rapid crystallization leads to distortion. One needs time, really, to ponder on how our ideals should take form, rather than simply a very quick hardening of these ideals. He goes on to say, the temporary ideal intended to guide the undeveloped aspirant, and let us note that undeveloped aspirants are guided by ideals. Anyway, that temporary ideal, going on, can become a barrier, separating him from truth and from the realization of inner, of a truer vision. So maybe we have to then ask ourselves, to what extent am I, any one of us, under the sway? Under the sway of these rapidly crystallizing yet very partial ideals, such as we might say the narrow-minded religious devotee is seeking to sustain, or the narrow-minded political idealist is seeking to sustain. These crystallizations become a prison. Now, if we can be flexible, we will not be caught in such a trap. And then here's the question, and let's ponder it. Are we caught in such a trap? Are we some kind of theosophical fundamentalist? When I look at my own case, I think I certainly ran the risk of becoming that, as the sixth ray was prominent, I think, for so many lives. And I'm remembering D.K. speaking to a man by the initials L.T.S.K. He was a third-ray soul with a sixth-ray personality who D.K. had in the group as a point of gratitude, but also because D.K. was protecting him, literally from himself, as during his last life, he ran the risk of veering off onto the left-hand path. And D.K. said to him, well, you dream of this big scientific career. I mean, he did have a fifth ray mind and a first ray astral body, but you're not suited for it. And when you encounter people, your only interest is the teaching. And what D.K. seemed to say was that you're forcing the teaching on everybody. Now that's something that happens with both the third ray and the sixth ray, and think of it, he had both of those rays. So flexibility, as Alice Bailey used to say, sitting light in the saddle. Sitting light in the saddle. And willingness to relinquish our cherished, that's another word for pet theories, our cherished idealistic beliefs. And not being fearful about opening our mind to an entirely different point of view, because usually that's what keeps the mind shut. So, okay. He ends, well, he's not really ending, this does go on, but whenever he begs us, this is an indication of the danger that the Master sees for us if we do not follow his advice. So he goes on and says, "So I would beg you, my disciples," some of them are accepted disciples, "so I would beg you, my disciples, to aim at a wide open simplicity which waits expectant of that new thing which is so ready today to precipitate, but which is being hindered from so doing by the idealists of the world, far more than by the man in the street." A wide open simplicity. And let us remember also, as he said, I think, Dina 2, page 518, that simplicity governs the way into Shambhala. But that itself is not easy to understand. And about this man in the street, DK says, "The latter is simpler in his reactions and more ready to grasp and see a way out of the immediate impasse than the mystic or the occultist, because he thinks in terms of humanity." Now there is something really to think about, which, let's say, with as much simplicity as may be possible. It seems that the very first of the important things that I listed above is, in a way, better grasped by the man in the street than by the disciple. Is that possible? He thinks in terms of humanity. That was the very first requirement. "The disciples of the world," he says, "with their nicely formulated ideals and their neatly expressed idealistic concepts," all of these, may I add, that may be indications of glamour, "are," going on, DK says, "are oft glamoured by the future beauty, because they are oblivious of the present opportunity." Future beauty versus present opportunity. Now, DK goes on here, many of them will find out later that they have been left behind as far as the registering, as far as registering the new truths is concerned. So a neat idealistic formulation is not the experience of a new truth. Well, in a way, truth can never be entirely new, but it can be new to a particular consciousness. Going on, DK says, to this Christ referred when he said that it was not possible to put new wine into old bottles, for that which is old will be destroyed by the expanding new life. Now that's maybe a different way of interpreting it than I have utilized in my own interpretations. I thought that the new wine might be contaminated by the old wine, which does not in quality measure up to the taste, the possibilities of the new wine. But it's also possible to think of it in this way, as DK tells us. So let us not be proud of our formulations. Because they may really reek of glamour and illusion. And by fixating upon our old formulations, we may miss the opportunity to move forward into the newer experiences. Okay, friends, so what I'll do now, since the reappearance of the Christ meditation, which Master DK really wanted us to do weekly, is coming up, and we're on page 86. And we have just been moving slowly to try to absorb what we can. We're getting ready for program number 37. And we're stopping at a point which is, well, it's not really a division, but it can be treated as such. So this has been the end of program 36, and our day today is the 26th of December, and we have been studying together Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Part 8, Video Commentary, and we're getting ready to move into Program 37. I imagine that once I reach Program 50, this Section 1 will be completed, something like that. And we'll begin on page 86. And really, there's less than 20 pages to go in this particular section of the book. A wide open simplicity. So I would beg you, my disciples. It's such an interesting formulation from the Master that he uses such humble words. We have to really ponder on this wide open simplicity. In a way, the higher that we ascend, the more simple things become. And it is humbling to realize that the maybe non-aspiring man in the street is taking things into consideration in a manner which is closer to what the Tibetan is suggesting. We do not want to be hindering factors with a sometimes more than a trace of egotism to support the kind of hindrance that we think is useful, but it isn't. So maybe we do have to think then about what it means to be or to possess a wide open simplicity. I'm reminded of the physicist Richard Feynman, who seemed to be able to explain the most abstruse concepts in modern physics to any intelligent person. But then he would say, when that was all over, he said, now look, if you want the rest, you just go to graduate school for the next 7 years. So maybe there are some of these considerations which can only be considered among disciples who are deeply learned in the books and when speaking to others, there are just better and more appropriate ways of conveying to them the main points. I'm remembering that I had the opportunity to say, well, look, wouldn't you be interested? I was talking to someone who is quite fundamentalistic in their Christian approach, and I was saying, wouldn't you be interested if the same secrets of the kingdom of heaven, about which Christ spoke to his disciples, were rendered available to you? Why did he speak that way? Why did he not speak to his disciples in parables, just the way he spoke to everybody else? And I thought maybe I could get through in that way, rather than by going into all of those, and who could, but still going into all of those secrets which might seem foreign or strange. Eventually, they could be taken up. So, as Master Moria tells us, please register the stage of consciousness of your interlocutor. I can see that my, what are they calling that? The live transcript is just putting down some very strange things, but don't worry about that. Sometimes it's correct. So we are educators, so many of us, and really all the members of the hierarchy, simply because of their hierarchical status, are in a way educators, and we have to find the right way to talk to people who have a chance to make the bridge. More than 50 years ago, I had a relative, very dear relative, and I was explaining something, and the result of my elaborate explanation were words from this person who said, I love you, Michael, but I don't like you. Okay, well, I had overstepped my bounds, and I had not been careful with the stage of consciousness of the individual. So that's a very delicate matter, and hopefully all of us are becoming more sensitive to the actual condition of the other, so that we can speak in a way that actually does advance the ageless wisdom rather than otherwise. Okay, friends, we're on program number 37. And when I can take it up, I will. Not too many, I think, programs remain. Maybe 7 or 8 or programs remain in this section 1. Let us take advantage of the treasure which hierarchy has decided to offer. First, Masters Moria, KH and DK, and then permission was given to offer still more. And it's interesting that sometimes along the line of the writing that Master DK gave through speech, he would indicate that now I've been given permission to say a bit more on this subject. And we cannot imagine that he could possibly exhaust the fullness of what could be said. Even what can be said can be seen as overwhelming. So maybe the best thing is not only to memorize all of these indications, but to see what context we are in, and then allow the coming of the appropriate remark. Of course, the Master's words are the most appropriate remarks, but maybe when we're in a context where some hope for bridging exists, maybe something will come to us in relation to that context, and will come easily, will flow, will come spontaneously. Okay, friends, so Tuya and I and the communications group, BL and Joe and Mikhail and Michael and a number of others who are helping periodically, wish you a lot of love and a steady absorption of the Master's words so they can be put into practice. We'll come back with page 86 when the time is right. I always hope that tonight is a good time, but sometimes there's just so much sitting at the computer that it's not possible to do. Okay, love and many blessings, and we'll see you shortly with program number 36, and bye for now.